What does Australia's next generation of young leaders have to say about the future of India-Australia relations in a post-COVID world? And how do Indian scholars, scientists, practitioners, and students factor in? You're listening to Shared Visions, the podcast that spotlights the Australian government's new Colombo plan and gets to the heart of these questions. Today, we speak with Tiana Iskra, a student of law and psychological science at La Trobe University, and Nick Booker, the founder of Indogenius and an educator based in India.
Tiana and I'm going to let you in on a secret, Rinak. Tiana and I have already spoken this morning, and I reckon we spoke for at least an hour and had a lot more to go.
Yep.
Oh wow, yeah. Oh, so you're like raring to go.
Perfect.
That's great.
Awesome. So my name's Tiana Iskra. I'm currently just finished my fourth year of a Bachelor of Laws and Bachelor of Psychological Sciences at La Trobe University in Bundoora in Melbourne, Australia. And I met Nick Booker when I decided to apply for an NCP scholarship in 2019. And I got through the process of the NCP scholarship application, got to the end, and was unsuccessful. But at that point, I realized that I fell in love with the NCP and everything that it was about. So I decided that what I wanted to commit to in my career was furthering our development in the Asia Pacific region. And I came across the Reimagining India program by Indogenius. And I thought, this is an incredible opportunity. Why would I not take it? So Nick came to La Trobe in Melbourne in August last year. And I met Nick there, and he gave a presentation on Reimagining India and everything that it's about. And I thought, this program is absolutely incredible. Everything that we did in the program and everything that the program was about spoke to a program that would really give me a full engagement in India and through the NCP as well. So then I decided I'm going to apply for Reimagining India and ended up there in February of this year, the last program of the time since COVID's happened.
So you were in India in February,
yeah, this year.
Okay, well then did you leave like just before the pandemic, or how did that work?
Yeah, we did. So the pandemic was at the start, and we made it just in time before everything changed.
Hi, I am Nick Booker. I'm the co-founder of Indogenius, and I'm the course director of Reimagining India, which is the new Colombo Plan NCP-supported program that Tiana came on. Tiana, I don't think I've ever told you this, but the day that I met you for the first time in Melbourne, when I gave that talk about the program, was also the first time that I was in the same place as Shah Rukh Khan, the Bollywood star. So yes. Melbourne and La Trobe are the epicenter of Bollywood fandom in Australia. And the day I happened to be there, Shah Rukh Khan was on campus at La Trobe, doing some activities and receiving an honorary doctorate. So it was a very India-themed moment, a conjunction of events. And it was brilliant to meet Tiana and some of the other students at La Trobe to tell them about Reimagining India and the NCP opportunity. And of course, I think about 6-7 months later, Tiana was on a plane into India in February at the beginning of this year. And yeah, as she said, that was sadly the last program we were able to complete before the pandemic hit and the travel restrictions came in March.
Mm-hmm. So Nick, you mentioned that you're still kind of running the program online, right? You're still doing a lot of things virtually.
Yeah. So we have had to innovate, as everyone in the world really has, in terms of new ways of working. And over the last few months, we've been working closely with Australian universities and NCP to relaunch Reimagining India in 2021 as a virtual study tour. And we really couldn't be more excited, because there are some things that we're going to be able to do online that we can't even do face to face. So it's going to be really in depth. It's going to be about a semester long, but condensed into a few weeks. And it's going to be a really exciting online virtual course with a lot of interactive elements. It's going to be live from India. So I'm based in India, and a lot of our instructors and the people we're going to be speaking to are going to be here in India, engaging in real time virtually with our students across Australia.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm interested in what you said in terms of the fact that now you're working digitally or in this online platform. It's actually allowing you to do a few things that you wouldn't have been able to do before. And that's kind of interesting to me because, you know, when I've spoken to teachers and educators, of course, a lot of them automatically feel the limitations of what has been presented to us, right? So just tell me a bit more about like how this is allowing us to do things that we weren't able to do before. Like in what ways do you think it's proving to be an advantage, like to be able to use these virtual platforms?
So as Tiana and our NCP alumni would testify, the 2-week Reimagining India study tour is super intense. We pack in maybe 30 different visits to companies, NGOs, hospitals, corporates, you name it. And we visit multiple locations in terms of cities, villages, states. So it's really intense. But there's only so much you can do in 2 weeks. And it takes time to move from A to B. And although there's a lot of learning that can be done while traveling in India, as well, all of us on this in this conversation know very well. On a virtual tour, we can jump from Chennai to Varanasi to rural Rajasthan in seconds. So we can have contributors all over India, including really hard to reach places who through you know, thanks to 4G and broadband internet, are able to get online and share what it's like where they are at that exact moment with students who are thousands of miles away in Australia. So the virtual study tour is actually going to cover a lot more of India, is going to reach deeper into India, and it's going to be able to provide opportunities for engaging with incredible Indians that we haven't previously been able to meet because we've only been going to Delhi, Bangalore, Mumbai, Jaipur, etc.
Speaking of technology, I guess I wanted to ask you, Tiana, about your work with Google India that you mentioned when you wrote back to us, the specifically the Internet Sathi program, which I thought was pretty interesting because, I mean, I'm sure the both of you know, but digital literacy is quite a discussed topic in India these days, especially because, you know, it's a common misconception that, you know, there's a lack of, you know, despite the lack of education and everything, but there's still a high amount of digital literacy in India and also people who are digital natives, right? Because there are young children all across India who know how to use technology. So yeah, just tell me a bit more about what you were doing in that program and what that looked like while you were here.
So we visited Google India as part of Reimagining India. And when we were there, we were introduced to the program that's called the Internet Sathi program. And I was amazed by the fact that the program itself aims to equip females in rural parts of India to become technologically literate and able to educate their community on how to use technology and using that technology to better their futures. So a lot of the work that they do allows the people in these communities to look at job opportunities, government benefits, healthcare, learn about agriculture, and the skills that they get from having access to that technology is going to help them growing into the future and bring up the level of literacy from the rural communities up to the standard that it's at in the other parts of India. So I was really inspired by that, and particularly the ground up grassroots approach that they took in enabling that change to happen.
And how do you think your involvement in, you know, like a grassroots initiative such as this, you know, how does that guide you in your work today? Like, what kind of takeaways did you have from that experience?
I really agree with the whole idea of grassroots initiatives in terms of that's the work that is going to help communities grow. And there's no point in going into a community and saying, this is what we have, we're going to do this to better you, without actually understanding what skills are needed and what the community needs to be successful. So for me, it's that sense of grassroots change, but also the compassion that comes with that, and knowing that these organizations such as Google India are looking to the people in the communities to help that growth happen.
Yeah, and I guess that's also, I feel like, a more meaningful form of empowerment, right? As opposed to you bringing in tools that you think might help people versus you see what already exists and you're just there as a conduit to sort of strengthen those means. So Nick, you said that you've you've coordinated the NCP program with Indogenius in India for quite a while now, right? Like how many years?
We've had the most amazing 5 years working with NCP and Australian universities. So over 250 students have benefited from NCP short-term mobility grants to come to India with us on our tours. And we've had maybe another 100, 200 students who've also come from Australia and earned credit. So there's been a huge engagement with India, not just through us, but through the NCP and other Australian-Indian collaborations. Over 1,000 Australians, and maybe it's even 1,500 now, Australian students are coming to India each year, which is extremely high compared to other countries in the world, like the US or European countries, the UK, for example. So Australia has really taken a lead in raising awareness of their own young people, young Australians, about the importance and relevance of India. And it's no surprise that it was the Australian DFAT report, the India Economic Strategy to 2035, which highlighted that there is no single major market out to 2035 with more growth opportunities for Australian business than India. And I think that the Australian government and the Australian universities are recognizing, better than perhaps some of the other countries in the world, the importance of getting young Australians out here face to face or remotely learning about India with Indians, because Indians are going to be a huge part of their future lives and careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, having spent 5 years now in India as an Australian, you know, what kind of attracts you to this work, and why do you feel? I feel like you're maybe personally attached to the work now. So you know, just
Runa,
tell me a little bit about that. Yeah,
let me let you in on a secret. I am not Australian. I'm originally from the United Kingdom. I'm British. I'm from the UK.
Okay.
But I moved to India. Yeah. No, it's fine. So I moved to India. It's my bad. I moved to India 14 years ago. So Meetu Soni, my wife and partner and co-founder in Indogenius, we set up the organization over 10 years ago to 11 years ago. And we've been helping students from all over the world, Australia, UK, New Zealand, America, a lot of different countries engage with India. And we've been doing it from the India side. So we're kind of helping represent India and help India engage with students from around the world.
Moving forward, what are the avenues of collaboration between India and Australia, you know, beyond the NCP program, which is kind of the first step, I would say, of, you know, the exchange of students or like young learners between India and Australia. But I'm just wondering from the both of you, you know, what do you see as moving forward, understanding the relationship that's already exists between India and Australia? You know, what ideas do you have about dealing with the pandemic, but also both countries kind of working together to, you know, create a bigger sense of collaboration or harmony in the Indo-Pacific region?
So there's so many opportunities for university students to go through internships or jobs once they've graduated. And I think that's a big avenue that needs to be looked at, because if students are going to be doing programs such as Reimagining India or going over to India for exchange, they may as well continue that interaction once they've graduated or in the second part of their degree. So job opportunities and internships are a big key factor in that. And in going off what I said before about the idea of compassion, I really like the idea of NGOs in Australia and NGOs in India working together, but also learning from each other. So the school Nirmasava, if I pronounce that correctly, they have a holistic approach to education. And what they do is they have the education, but they also provide meals to the students, access to healthcare as well. And I think Australian schools can really learn from that in terms of making sure that students that come to school are able to engage, given the proper nutrition, and are supported in that holistic sense. So looking at that collaboration between Australia and India, I think that's an important thing to take in terms of education. I think, Nick, if you have some other things that you could talk about in terms of that bilateral relationship.
Tiana, that's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, you're right. So if you think of almost every career in Australia, whether you're going to be working for a university, whether you're going to be working in government, or whether you're going to be working in accounts or consulting or technology or startups, you're going to be working with Indians and you're going to be working with India. So you're either going to be outsourcing to India and colleagues based here, or you're going to be designing products and services with Indian market in mind, or you're going to have Indian colleagues working with alongside you in offices and schools and universities and classrooms in Australia. So it's so important for young Australians to learn about Indians and obviously hopefully persuade as many Indians to learn about Australia and Australian culture. But that business culture is going to be tremendous. Working with Indian colleagues, working for Indian companies, whether it's corporates like Infosys or startups like Zomato, or whether it's working for MNCs like EY or Accenture that have huge operations here in India. And then the second thing that you said really speaks to the heart of what we've been doing for the last 10 years and what really motivates us, which is what can we learn from India? So what is it that India can teach the world? And that means in terms of like the philosophy and the traditions and the kind of knowledge that has been developed in the civilization that we call India. And it means the practical happening right now, activities and innovations, whether it's things like the Jaipur foot or, in prosthetic limbs, or whether it's Zomato's, you know, super high-tech, clever app for restaurant discovery and takeaway deliveries. So you name it, whether it's yoga and meditation, India's past and obviously ever present, or it's India's cutting-edge technology. There's so much that we can learn from India from around the world. There's so much that the rest of the world has to learn from India and about India.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that also speaks to the fact that if students have done programs such as Reimagining India before, or done jobs or internships over in India, that it's so important to continue to maintain those connections and to also foster new relationships with different organizations to keep that growth happening.
There are a number of companies now, whether, you know, Infosys is a very good example, but I mentioned some of the startups like Ola, Oyo, Zomato. They're expanding in Australia and they want to hire Australians to come and work for them in Australia. And then you've got companies like Mu Sigma in data analytics. They're an Indian company, a big, you know, consulting corporate. They want to hire Australians to come and work for them. So you're finding more internship opportunities being developed by Indian companies for Australians because they want to grow in the Australian market, or they want to use Australia as a kind of bridgehead into high income companies and their growth plans. And then in terms of the kind of other end of the spectrum, in terms of making the world a better place through helping others, you've got a number of charities, of schools, whether it's providing midday meals, nutrition, or whether it's teaching remotely, where young Australians can engage online over the coming months before we're able to lift the travel restrictions and get on a plane back to India.
Definitely. And, you know, having mentored now, you mentioned 250 students, right, Nick?
Well, over the last 10 years, we have taught over 1,500 students, nearly 2,000 students from around the world. Yeah. Of that, around 400 are from Australia, and of that, 250 have been beneficiaries of the New Colombo Plan short-term mobility grants.
Right. So how have you seen kind of the program evolve and change over the years? Obviously, we know what new challenges present themselves to us now, but if you could just tell me a little bit about how the program has changed or maybe evolved over the years?
Runak, that's a lovely question. Yeah. Over the years, we have been able to experience firsthand the transformation of India and of the organizations that we visit. So when we were going to visit an Oyo rooms in 2017, they were hundreds of employees in a small office. They're now tens of thousands and top, you know, third largest hotel chain in the world. So when we, even though we're going to the same organizations like a Paytm or a Google India or a Zomato or an Infosys or an EY, we're going to the same organizations perhaps several times a year for several years. every time we go, we are experiencing their growth, their transformation. And I must say, it is incredibly inspiring. And it, I mean, it's literally awe-inspiring, the growth and the way that these companies are evolving and adapting and scaling up. It's extraordinary. And then the wider Indian transformation, the India story. So the rise of smartphones and the fact that, you know, people like us have been fortunate to have smartphones for, you know, maybe 10 years. But in India, you're now seeing people in the last 2 or 3 years, particularly since the introduction of Jio and the cheapest data rates in the world, buying smartphones for 1,000, 2,000 rupees, $20, $30, getting SIM cards with 20 gigabytes of data, 30 gigabytes, 40 gigabytes for a couple of dollars a month. And they are using banking, financial services in ways that aren't even happening in Australia or America. So it's incredibly cutting edge, even at the bottom end, at the lower income level, because of the technological transformation that is now playing out in India, as well as the economic growth. And obviously this year, the enormous traumas created by the COVID pandemic and the policies that have been required to contain it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something about a good idea or a good business concept in India where if it's initially successful, just kind of has this tendency to really explode and just do really well very quickly. You know, the Oyo example you mentioned is really apt, because I remember, you know, just from living in India, 1 year Oyo is not a thing, and the next year Oyo is just everywhere, because the guy who came up with it just had the extremely simple idea of just already leveraging the hundreds and hundreds of motels and inns and hotels that already exist, right? And I feel like that method of innovation is very uniquely Indian in that way. The same way with Paytm or Google Pay, where now, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm paying my rent or if I'm paying, like, you know, the guy who sells me fruits. It's all just done on my phone, which is, you know, something, like you said, I lived in the US for very long, and that's not something I would be able to do there. It's not something I would be able to do in the UK either. So yeah, I definitely hear you on, you know, countries like Australia coming in and being able to absorb a lot of the ways in which I think Indian companies approach innovating these small day-to-day activities. There's a lot to be absorbed in that way.
Mm-hmm. I think the NCPE program really engages students with the Indo-Pacific in a way that no other program does. And I hope it's not something that ever gets overlooked, because the Indo-Pacific is such an important region in Australia's development in every regard. And it's going to be our future, and in particular India, as Nick's been talking about. And it's so important that students do take on these opportunities and engage with countries like India, and also engage with Reimagining India within IndoGenius, because that's where we learn the basic knowledge of what organisations we can engage with and the change that can happen if we do engage. So for me, my biggest taking point from all of that was what India teaches us, and for me it's a sense of compassion. And that compassion that drives not only the NGOs, but also the corporate business sector, and coming together the NGOs and businesses really build India from the ground up. And I'd love to see Australia continue to do similar work, and Australia's to continue to engage with India. So for students that are looking to move into the Indo-Pacific or work in the Indo-Pacific, I highly recommend India, because that's where our future lies at the moment.
Well said, Tiana. That was beautiful. Yeah, and I think over the coming months, as we start to hopefully come out of this pandemic year and into a world where we are once again able to travel and to hug and, you know, be with our loved ones and family members and all of the things that we used to take for granted but have now been taken away from us because of the circumstances of 2020, I think it's also really important to recognize and remember that India is going to be absolutely critical to that happening, because India is the pharmacy of the world. Over 60% of vaccines are made in India. The majority of all the vaccines that are going to be used in order to end the COVID situation are going to be manufactured in India. And you might see Oxford, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, all of the, you know, the Moderna, Pfizer, all of these big name multinational pharmacy brands, pharmaceutical companies that are creating the vaccines. But the ones that are producing it are their partners and their suppliers here in India. So it is going to be India that is going to release the world from the lockdowns and the chaos of the coronavirus pandemic. And it is to India that I think we can turn for optimism over the coming years in terms of the opportunities for solving problems, solving challenges faced by people all over the world, and for creating the economic growth and the opportunities to rebuild prosperity that we need to get through this. And of the vaccines that are going to be produced in India, there's been a commitment by people like Serum Institute, who are the partner for the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, to provide at least 50% of their vaccines to other global South developing countries. So when Africa and parts of South America and lower income countries are desperately needing to be released from the strains of the coronavirus outbreak, again, it will be India's commitment to low cost vaccines that will be helping them achieve that. So India is absolutely key to the world getting back on track.